The Royal Desserts Hour, directed by Rudy Valley. Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and Company. As we look at it, the curse of radio entertainment is sameness. Sameness afflicts alike the listener and the program producer. And its cause lies in radio's huge and insatiable appetite for people, words, and music. A radio program happens every week. That's the trouble. We do our level best to conquer the devil of sameness by means of a relentless search for new things and new ideas. And this week we believe we have, in one instance at least, scored a notable victory over monotony. We call your particular attention to tonight's dramatic interlude, a remarkable anti-war poem by Stephen Vincent Benet, in which you will hear one of Broadway's most sought-after actors, Arthur Byron. A musical score for the poem has been written by Robert Emmett Dolan. In addition, our cast includes
Fred Keating,
magician, movie actor, and suave comedian,
Bob Howard,
swing pianist and comic on the keys, a discovery, we think,
Benny McQuaid,
elevator operator. Benny has ideas himself about what's wrong with radio. Maybe he will express your own point of view.
Irving Caesar,
with a new safety song designed for the amusement and the edification of you, your children. Tommy Riggs, and most especially, Betty Lou. Musically, tonight's program is notable for the first radio reflection of our Hollywood visit. Selections from the entire score of our picture, Gold Diggers in Paris.
Rudy's modest blushes, may we point out that this is our first look into the Gold Diggers in Paris score. Wondrously arrayed in a naval officer's uniform, Rudy sings this number at the opening of the picture. Scene, the Ballet Nightclub, operated by Rudy, who is losing 18 cents for every customer who comes in. Title, I Want to Go Back to Ballet.
An island of enchantment where the flying fishes play, and a lazy breeze keeps nudging the trees on a tropical summer day. It's a paradise for dreamers, it's the land of missing men, for I understand that many who land may never come back again. It's a long, long way to Bali, but it's there that I would go. Well, of all the South Sea Islands, it's the only one I know. I want to go back to Bali, to that island of sunny skies. You can see those scenes in magazines, but you never can see the flies. Oh, it looks like our back alley, but still I love it more. For when the gals meet you down at the pier, they wear less than the ladies do here. If the day and the vision is clear, you can see the shore. Oh, I want to go back to Bali, where there ain't such a word as no. Where to hug and squeeze a Balinese is always apropos. The Interlaken Valley may be the place to go. Still, I want to go back, and I'm going to go back to Bali.
Thank you.
takes all kinds of... It takes all kinds of people to make a town like this, New York. And in this most vertical of cities, not the least important citizen is the lad who helps millions daily to defy the law of gravitation, the elevator man. We have with us tonight one of those intrepid indoor aviators, Mr. Benny McQuaid, pilot of cage number 7 in the Fuller Building, Upper Madison Avenue, Manhattan. A good many people connected with the business end of this program use Benny's elevator, and Benny passes out radio criticisms on the way up. Now, what radio needs is more and better criticism. So we're going to let Benny have his say right out in public tonight. Presenting Benny McQuaid, critic and elevator operator. Going up. Well, Mr. McQuaid, how are things in the lift racket? Sort of in and out, I suppose?
Yeah, we have our ups and downs.
Very nicely put, Mr. McQuaid.
You think that's good?
Why, yes, I think so.
That's what's wrong with radio.
What's wrong with radio?
Old jokes. That crack about ups and downs is very old, Mr. Valley. Very old. If I had a nickel for every time I heard it, I could buy the Fuller Building.
If it's old, why did you use it?
We're on the radio, ain't we? I just wanted to sound like a radio comedian.
I see. I suppose an elevator man does hear a lot of old jokes between floors.
Yeah. There ain't no place to hide. You gotta stand up there and take it.
Whereas, if you don't like a radio program, you can turn it off.
And how? That's the only pleasure us poor people have left in life.
Is the prevalence of old jokes the only complaint you have to make against radio as it stands, Mr. McQuaid? What else bothers you?
The people that laugh at bum jokes.
Meaning studio audiences?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. What about studio audiences?
Old Joe.
Right there.
Oh, I'm all mixed up.
That's all right. There we are. There we are.
Yeah, they sound to me like they were all nitwits. The way they laugh, you'd think somebody said something funny.
Well, does this criticism of yours include all radio comedians? Don't you like anybody?
Sure, Fred Allen, that's a great comedian.
And I agree with you. I don't suppose Mr. Allen has a more enthusiastic admirer than yours truly.
You know, you could learn quite a lot from Fred Allen yourself.
Well, now, Mr. McQuaid, I'm inclined to agree with you there. In fact, I might go so far as to say that I have learned a lot from Fred Allen. You see, we're both down East Yankees.
Yeah, but he's funnier.
Now, Mr. McQuaid, let us not confuse the issue. When you're scampering up and down in that bouncing bird cage of yours, don't you have kind thoughts for anybody except Fred Allen? Don't you like, say, Charlie McCarthy?
Sure, he's pretty good, but that guy Bergen gives me a pin in the neck.
Oh, come now, Mr. McQuaid, you sound bitter.
I ain't no lollipop.
So they tell me, Mr. McQuaid, so they tell me. I should imagine you suffer from a pretty constant pain in the neck, sort of a chronic, as it were.
Yeah, it gets worse Thursday nights.
Am I to infer, Mr. McQuaid, that you do not care for our little show?
Not passionately, no.
What was that, Mr. McQuaid?
Well, sometimes it's good.
Thank you, Mr. McQuaid. And other times?
Well, other times it sort of smells.
Why, Mr. McQuaid, just what would you say is wrong? What loathsome error dooms our efforts to dismal failure, in your opinion?
Sometimes you get too highbrow. You got to remember, Mr. Valley, we didn't all of us come from Yale.
Mr. McQuaid, let's keep personalities out of this discussion. Why, some of my best friends are Harvard men.
Maybe that's the trouble.
By the way, how'd you like my Fred Allen imitation?
Is that what you're trying to do?
It was, and I think it's pretty fair myself.
Well, that's one man's opinion.
Yes, isn't it? Suppose we just move over on to safer ground, Mr. McQuaid. Tell me this. How do you and your fellow knights of the wingless monoplane regard that other intellectual marvel, that celebrated lover of the classics, Mr. Bing Crosby?
He talks too much.
So much for my learned colleague.
Say, are you still trying to talk like Allen?
No, not anymore. Mr. McQuaid, you said a moment ago that I could learn a lot from Fred. Just what do you mean?
You could learn to imitate him better for one thing.
Yes, I suppose I could, and what else?
Well, those interviews he has, they're good. He always ends up with a swell gag.
Well, now, let's see if we can't do the same.
Suppose, Mr. McQuaid, that your elevator is at the top floor.
Yeah?
You press a button and pull a lever.
Yeah?
And presto, your elevator's down at the bottom again. What do you say then?
Main floor, everybody out.
Main floor, Mr. McQuaid, everybody out.
If there is a hit in our score from Gold Diggers in Paris, most of us seem to feel that this is probably it. A lovely song that I sing on shipboard to very lovely Rosemary Lane. Daydreaming.
End of a hearty meal.
One night the moon was so mellow, Rosita met young Manuelo. He held her like this lovely miss, then gave her a kiss, this fellow. He said he was glad he had met her, that soon he would come and get her. But she said, no, I cannot go until I know you better.
Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton. He kept on the stealing and he had a feeling she was satisfied. Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton. She was saying go, so he held her closer, that's how he complied.
Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton. He kept on the stealing and he had a feeling she was satisfied. Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton. She was saying closer, so he held her closer, that's how he complied.
Each night the moon grows more mellow, and so does our young Manuelo. All under its spell, he comes to tell his love so well, this fellow. She tries her best to resist him. She won't let him know she's missed him. But under the charm of his strong arm, it seems no harm to kiss him.
Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton.
He kept on the stealing and he had a feeling she was satisfied.
Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton.
She was saying go, so he held her closer, that's how he complied.
Tippy-tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton. He kept on the stealing and he had a feeling she was satisfied. Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-ton, tippy-ton. He was saying go, so he held her closer, that's how he complied.
Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-tin, 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 tippy-tippy-
Arthur Byron in For Future Reference by Stephen Vincent Benet. We want you to give For Future Reference your best attention for these reasons. Its message, a warning to a world on the brink of war. Its principal actor, a distinguished veteran, Arthur Byron. His performance with Catherine Cornell in Joan of Arc remains in our memory as one of the very finest things the stage has given us in recent years. Its author, Stephen Vincent Benet, celebrated American poet. Our Lincoln's birthday episode from his major work, John Brown's Body, we recall with pride. Its musical score, composed and conducted by a brilliant young musician, Robert Emmett Dolan. Arthur Byron in For Future Reference. Time, the future. A man in the middle years talks to his son, a youth of 18.
That was the second year of the Third World War. The one between us and them. Well, we've gotten used. We don't talk about it early enough. Well, there was all sorts of talk the first years after the peace. A million theories, a million wild suppositions, a million hopeful explanations and plans. But we don't talk about it now. We don't even ask. We might do the wrong thing. I don't guess you'd understand that. But you're 18 now. You can take it. You better know. You see, you were born just before the war broke out. Who started it? Oh, they say it was us or them. And it looked like it at the time. You don't know what that's like. But anyhow, it started, and there it was. Just a little worse, of course, than the one before. But mankind was used to that. We didn't take notice. They bombed our capital. And we bombed theirs. You've been to the broken towns. Yeah. Yes, they take you there. They show you the look on the tormented earth. But they can't show you the smell or the gas or the death or how it felt to be there and part of it. But we didn't know. I swear that we didn't know. I remember the first hint there was something wrong. Something beyond all wars. And bigger. And strange. Something you couldn't explain. I was back on leave. Strange, you felt on leave as you've always felt. But I went to see the chief at the hospital. And there he was in the same old laboratory. A little older, with some white in his hair. But the same eyes that went through you, and the same tongue. It hadn't been able to touch him, not the bombs. Nor the ruin of his life's work, nor anything. He blinked at me from behind his spectacles and said,
It's you. They wouldn't let me have guinea pigs, except for the war work. But I steal a few. And they made me a colonel. Expect me to salute. I don't know how. Sit down and smoke.
And I did, and it was like home. He was a great man. You might remember that. And I'd worked with him. Well, finally he said to me,
How's your boy?
Oh, healthy. We're lucky.
Yes. He might even grow up. Though the intervals between wars are getting shorter.
You're cheerful.
Oh, I'm always careful. Seen these, by the way?
Seen what?
Oh, just the normal city statistics. Death and birth. The birth rate's dropping.
Oh, well, really, sir. We know it's always dropped in every war.
Not like this. I can show you the curve. It looks like the side of a mountain going down and faster. The last 3 months. Yes, a good deal faster. I showed it to Lobenheim. He was puzzled. It makes a neat problem. Yes? They'd better make peace. They'd better make peace.
Well, sir, if we break through in the spring...
Break through? What's that? They'd better make peace. The stars may be tired of us. No, I'm not a mystic. I leave that to the big scientists and bad novels. But I never saw such a queer maternity curve. I wish I could get to Ernst on their side. He'd tell me the truth. But the fools won't list. Let me do it. Suppose there were no more babies. What then?
But, sir, I asked. But, sir, he said, will you tell me, please, what is life? Why it's given, why it's taken away? Oh, I know. We make a jelly inside a test tube. We keep a cock's heart living inside a jar. We know a great many things. And what do we know? We think we know what finished the dinosaurs, but do we? Maybe they were given a chance and then it was taken back. There are other beasts that only kill for their food. No, I'm not a mystic. But there's a certain pattern in nature, you know. And we're upsetting it daily. Eat and mate and go back to the earth after that. And that's all right. But now, we're blasting and sickening Earth itself. She's been very patient with us. I wonder how long. Well, I thought the chief had gone crazy just at first. And then I remembered the look on No Man's Land. That bitter landscape. Pockmarked like the moon. Lifeless as the moon's face. And horrible. The thing we'd made with the guns. If it were Earth, it looked as though it hated. Well, I said, and my voice was a little thin. He looked hard at me. Oh, ask the women, he grunted. They won't know, but ask them what they think about it. I didn't ask them. Not even your mother. She was strange those days. But 2 weeks later, I was back in the lines, and somebody sent me a paper. Encouragement for the troops and all of that. All about the fall of their birth rate on their side. I guess you know now. There was still a day when we fought. And the next day, the women knew. I don't know how they knew. But they smashed every government in the world like a heap of broken china within 2 days. And we'd stopped firing by then. And we looked at each other. We didn't talk much those first weeks. You couldn't talk. We started in rebuilding, and that was all. And at first, nobody would even touch the guns, not even to melt them up. They just stood there, silent. Pointing the way they had, and nobody there. There was a kind of madness in the air. A quiet, bewildered madness. Strange and shy. You'd pass a man who was muttering to himself, and you know what he was muttering to himself and why. I remember coming home and your mother there. She looked at me and at first didn't speak at all. And then she said,
burn those clothes. Take them off and burn them or I'll never touch you or speak to you again.
And then I knew I was still in my uniform. Well, I've told you now. They tell you now at 18. There's no use telling before. Do you understand? That's why we have the ritual of the earth. The day of sorrow. The other ceremonies. Oh, yes, at first people hated the animals because they still bred. But we've gotten over that. Perhaps the animals can work it better when it's their turn. If it's their turn. I don't know. I don't know at all. You can call it a virus, of course, if you like the word. But we haven't been able to find it. Not yet. No. Well, we keep the toys in the stores and the colored books and people marry and plan and the rest of it, but something or someone has tired of us. You see, there aren't any children. They aren't born anymore.
In Paris, the Normandy docks in France, Rudy warns his invading host of chorus girls against pitfalls ahead and goes into a chevalier impersonation with great aplomb. The tune, Strangers in Paris. Happen to be a stranger in Paris. Ah, oui, oui. There are lots of famous places that you'll never get to see. When a pair of lips bonjour you and two beautiful eyes amour you, you'll wonder why. So did I met her at the Martinique. There isn't much to tell. She was so chic, and I was weak. And so I fell for the mademoiselle and discovered that she was from New Rochelle. Her French was simply frightful, but her kisses were so delightful. How she fooled me. Ah, oui, oui. If you're lonely, you're in danger. If you happen to be a stranger in gay Paris. You're lonely, you're in danger. If you happen to be a stranger in gay Paris, eh bien, oui, oui. There are lots of famous places that you'll never get to see. When a pair of lips bonjour you and two beautiful eyes amour you, you'll wonder why. So did I. I met her at the Martinique. There isn't much to tell her. She was so chic and I was weak. And so I fell for the mademoiselle and discovered that she was from New Rochelle. Her French was simply frightful, but her kiss was so delightful. How she fooled me. Oui, oui. If you're lonely, you're in danger. If you happen to be a stranger in gay Paris. will serve to introduce Bob Howard. Bob comes from up Harlem way. If you've ever visited Tilly's Fried Chicken Emporium, you've met him. His white and chocolate grin, his piano, and his uncanny ability to read the minds of Tilly's customers. Lately, he's moved downtown to my good friend Will Rockwell's place in 52nd Street. For some time, local listeners have heard his sweet and hot pianology and patter on the air. Later on tonight, he starts his own sponsored program on WEAF. We think Bob Howard has a rendezvous with fame tonight. How about it, Bob?
How about it? I'm going to take it and go for myself.
WEAF, New York.
The Royal Desserts, Act Two. People of the Act, Fred Keating, Bob Howard, Tommy Riggs, Betty Lou, and Irving Caesar. Another thing we believe about radio: it should accept a certain amount of social responsibility in return for the privilege of invading your home. That should mean more than a duty to bar bad taste from the microphone. It should mean positive action for the good of the listening audience. All of which is a too solemn way of introducing the exceedingly unsolemn Irving Caesar, whose songs of safety not only do good, but also amuse. Irving, supposing you run over the general idea for the benefit of new listeners. Mr. Irving Caesar.
These songs were written for Johnny, be careful, whose father and mother are busy all day. Whose father and mother and sister and brother say, Johnny, be careful when you are at play. Dear little children, as you turn the pages, you'll also find songs here for Mary, beware. And they say to Mary, be wise and be wary, and mother will never have gray in her hair.
My goodness, Mr. Caesar, you certainly do sing real hard.
Well, Betty Lou, that's because I'm very much in earnest. For instance, I want you to pay very close attention right now while I sing a new song.
Well, can I sit in your lap while you sing?
Certainly, hop right up.
There. Pins and needles, needles and pins. That's how all the trouble begins. Never hold needles or pins in your lips. You know what happens when one of them slips. Pins and needles have points that will stick and prick you so hard that you'll get very sick. Pins and needles and needles and pins. You should beware of these dangerous twins. Knives and scissors, scissors and knives. That's how all the trouble arrives. When you use scissors or knives at your play, when you are through with them, put them away. Scissors and knives are useful, no doubt, for cutting things off and for cutting things out. When they are open, you'd better beware. Scissors and knives are a dangerous pair.
Now, do you get the idea, Betty Lou?
Oh, sure. Little girls shouldn't play with needles and pins, or else they'll get stuck, don't you?
Don't I what?
Well, don't you think that spanking is bad for little girls, too?
Well, that's open to debate. It's been going on for a long time.
Well, did my granddaddy spank my daddy when daddy was a little boy?
I don't know, Betty Lou. I imagine he did.
And did granddaddy's daddy spank him?
Probably.
And did granddaddy's daddy spank him?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, my goodness gracious.
My goodness gracious what?
Who started this spanking business anyway?
Well, don't tell me you're going to get another spanking.
Oh, no, I already got it.
Well, there must have been a reason.
There was.
Who gave you the spanking this time?
My big sister Helen, too.
Well, you must have done something.
No, it was something that Mr. Goo-Goo didn't do.
Mr. Goo-Goo? Who's Mr. Goo-Goo?
He's my big sister's beau.
Well, what was it that Mr. Goo Goo didn't do?
He didn't catch my big sister when she fell.
Where did she fall?
She fell on the living room floor.
Well, I think your big sister might have been angry at that.
Yes, but that's not what she was most angry about.
What was she most angry about?
Well, I heard my big sister tell Mommy that just when Mr. Goo Goo was going to pop the question, she fell on the floor.
I see, but Betty Lou, you still haven't told me how your sister happened to fall on the floor.
Well, I guess it was because there wasn't room enough in Mr. Goo Goo's lap.
Betty Lou, what do you mean there wasn't room enough in Mr. Goo Goo's lap?
Well, there wasn't room enough for my big sister and the cat and the dog, too.
Cat and dog? Where did they come from?
Oh, from the kitchen. One minute they were in the kitchen, then bang, bang, meow, and there was Mr. Goo Goo holding a cat instead of my big sister.
You mean the dog was chasing the cat?
He wasn't chasing my granddaddy.
Did your granddaddy have anything to do with this?
Oh, no, only he had to bend over to tie his shoe.
Tie his shoe?
Yes, and that's what woke up the cat.
When your granddaddy bent over to tie his shoe?
Yeah, no, when granddaddy jumped and stepped on the cat's tail, he yelled like everything.
Who yelled? The cat or your granddaddy?
Both of them yelled, and that's when the dog started to chase the cat. He was awful mad.
The dog was mad?
Yeah, no, granddaddy.
Oh. Well, what was he mad about?
Well, he was mad about the whole thing, too. I don't think he liked the game Benji Smith and I were playing.
Oh, so you and Benji were playing a game.
Yes.
What sort of a game?
Pin the tail on the donkey, see?
I'm beginning to see, yes.
Well, that's just the trouble. Benji couldn't see.
He was blindfolded?
Yes, he was blindfolded.
And now, just a minute, Betty Lou. Let's put two and two together.
How did you know that?
How'd I know what?
That Benji missed the donkey and pinned the donkey's tail on Granddaddy right where he bent over.
Well, now you see what happens when little girls and boys play with pins and needles.
Yes, but this time it was my granddaddy who got stuck. needles and pins. That's how all the trouble begins. Never hold needles or pins in your lips.
That's right.
You know what happens if one of them slips.
So, needles and pins have points that will stick and prick you so hard that you'll get very sick. Pins and needles and needles and pins, you should beware of those dangerous twins.
You know, that's splendid advice, Betty Lou. Splendid. You'll never hold a pin or a needle in your mouth, will you, Betty Lou?
Oh, no, sir, Mr. Matney. Because why?
Because why, Betty Lou?
Because if I should swallow it, it would stick Mr. Tommy Riggs.
I guess so. That's right, Betty. And now I'll tell all the mothers and fathers listening in how they can get a copy of Irving Caesar's Song of Safety, Pins and Needles, to impress this great safety lesson on their children. All users of Royal Desserts may have the
Yes, I'm going to play my own number. Called Talk to Me, because I knows what to do. I know all the answers. Just give me the cue. And talk to me, yeah, talk to me, because I knows what to do. There's no need to be backwards. Now just give me the shoe. And talk to me, because I knows what to do. Some folks think I'm jamming and jiving, they call me Big Old Clown. But if you've got bubbles, they're just like bubbles in life, come chuck it on down. Now you should have asked me sooner, I really thought you knew, that I'm the one can put you straight. Let's fix up a little date and talk to me, cause I knows what to do. When spelling flattened Lewis, all the folks thought Joe was through. He said, talk to me, cause I knows what to do. I went to see the circus and the parrot in the zoo. He said, talk to me, cause I knows what to do. Some folks think I'm jamming and jiving, they call me a big old clown. But if you've got trouble, they'll bust like bubbles when I come trucking on down. You should have asked me sooner, I really thought you knew, that I'm the one can put you straight. Let's fix up a little date and talk to me, cause I knows, I knows, I knows, I knows, I knows, I knows what to do. Ha-ha! Now, Now, folks. Now, folks, for the next number, that I'm going to do here, I've cooked up a little bit of Dipsy Doodle. You know, that's the rule. People say Dipsy Doodle, but I say Dipsy Doodle because I'm going to doodle all up and down this keyboard. Here it is. Listen to that bass. Much, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the next bit of business that I want to do here for you, I want to give you my own impersonation of a mechanical player piano. I know you people know what a player piano is, so I'm not going to explain it to you. I just want you to sit there and see if I know what I'm talking about.
Gold Diggers in Paris finale, the Latin Quarter.
And if you don't show me, put me off your team.
But we don't need to go, for in my studio, I'm all equipped to show the city. Come on and watch me. Close me. You'll see just what I mean. I'll paint you a scene. I think the place to start would be the quaintest part. That section called the Montmartre, the Latin Quarter. I simply flick my wrist and give the brush your twist. There goes ooh la la la,
ooh la la la, ooh la la la, ooh la la la.
I love the way you paint. You take a girl who ain't and paint her as a
safe.
For just a quarter, she poses just for art. She does it from the heart. She does it a la carte.
You taught her.
That gal from Armentiers has been around for years. We'll show you souvenirs the soldiers bought her.
She owes a lot of thanks to quite a lot of yanks for what a lot of friends they brought her.
So this is Gay Paris, come on along with me. We're stepping out to see the Latin Quarter. Put on your old beret, let's sing the Marseillaise, and put our wine away like water. Hooray for Lafayette, hooray for Crepe Suzette,
and if you ain't wet one yet, you oughta
come on and parley.
That's all the Frenchmen sing. That's how they have their fling. That's how the Frenchmen swing the Latin Quarter.
They're 50 million long and all built on rock. Let's go! Ooh la la la! Ooh la 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 la!
So we come to item number 5, Mr. Fred Keating.
Mr. Keating has me a little worried. I hardly know how to present him to you. Fred first appeared on the American scene as a reporter on the old New York Morning World. Next, we knew him as Fred Keating, the magician, who went about causing birds in cages to disappear. Later, he appeared in vaudeville and reviews as master of ceremonies and comedian. He followed this with his first appearance in a legitimate play as a leading man to Tallulah Bankhead. For the past 5 years, he has been in Hollywood making pictures. In addition to all this, he has just completed a novel which is being published this fall. So again, I say, item number 5 has me worried. He may as well worry all of us. Meet Fred Keating. Fred, perhaps you can help me out. What do people call you now?
Why, Mr. Valley, you know you can't use words like those on the radio. But seriously, Rudy, I understand that I am allotted exactly 5 minutes on your program in which to be a sensation. So if you don't mind, I'd sort of adore telling you all about my many successes in the motion pictures.
That's all right with me, Fred. What will you do with the remaining 4 minutes?
Same old Rudy, always clowning.
Well, Fred, it is nice that you're back in Broadway again.
Oh, you're glad I'm back too, are you, Rudy? Well, thanks. That's just the way they feel about it out in Hollywood. Although, as a matter of fact, you know, I only came back on account of my health. I'm anemic, you know. Yeah, I'm anemic from being cut so much in all my pictures. So you see, my doctor prescribed solitude for me. He says I've got to get away from people, to be all alone. Someplace where I'm sure not to see anybody. And so I am going back to vaudeville. Of course, Rudy, after all, you're a little too young to remember vaudeville. But perhaps your father may have told you about it. You know, they say that vaudeville is dead, Rudy, but it isn't. No. It's just laid out differently. And to prove it, you know, I have been booked to play in every vaudeville theater in the country. Of course, I was going to say the entire circuit, but of course you wouldn't understand the term. So you see, I'll be away from Hollywood for a long time. Yes, I'll be gone. Oh, I'll be gone at least a week. And Rudy, as a matter of fact, you might find it very educational to drop into the theater, if it's still there. Of course, it's not so much the type of vaudeville your father must have told you about. It's more of an endurance contest. Yeah, we do about 11 shows a day, besides which we give you 3 feature pictures, March of Time, 2 Mickey Mice, 5 newsreels, 4 shorts, and about an hour and a half of good, snappy trailers of forthcoming pictures. Because the trailers are the best part of the show. They save you the trouble of seeing the pictures. And then don't forget that every night is bank night. And besides that, we give you bingo, screeno, bunco, a set of dishes, beauty contest, popularity contest, amateur contest, and if that isn't enough, you can go out into the lobby and play basketball with the ushers. Oh, of course, they do slip on the stage show from time to time to give the audience a chance to go out and eat, but I don't expect to be able to do very much of that. I'll probably just stay in the dressing room and have something light, like a cup of tea, and for dessert, maybe I'll have a blood transfusion, but...
Drop in anytime.
I'd love to, Fred, but what's the best time to see you, Rack?
Oh, any time at all. It doesn't matter. I'll be on or just going on. Because if you get there before 9 in the morning, you can see the entire show for 15 cents.
15 cents?
15. Oh, I know. I know that's a lot of money these days, but then remember, Rudy, that the theater doesn't get it all. You see, first the government deducts 2 cents for the Social Security tax, and then 3 cents for the city sales tax. And that only leaves the theater a dime. And then out of that, another nickel goes for the income tax and 4 cents more for the state tax. So the theater only gets a penny profit. Then, of course, out of that, the actors have to get paid.
Yes, Fred, things have certainly changed since you were here last.
Changed? Even I've changed. My voice has changed. I'm a man now. And, Rudy, you take the hotels.
You take them.
Well, of course, you can't really take them because, after all, the banks have them. But even the hotels have changed a lot. Why, you know, the hotel where I'm stopping, over there at the... that lovely hotel. What is the name of it? The hotel... I'll have to look through my towels, I guess. But it's really lovely, Rudy. I mean, I've never seen such politeness. Why, you know, the clerk actually smiled when he threw the key at me. You know, I tried to get a weekly rate there, but the manager explained that nobody had ever stayed there a week. But I don't know why. My room is charming. Small, but charming. Because I couldn't quite get my trunk inside, so they merely put the room in the storehouse, and now I'm occupying the trunk. And if you don't think things are tough, Rudy, listen. Why, do you know that only the other afternoon I was driving over Brooklyn Bridge in my Rolls Royce?
Oh, you have a Rolls Royce?
Yes. Well, it's practically the same thing. I mean, it has four wheels. You know, I bought it at one of those used car places. The man said it had only been driven 90 miles. Yes, he forgot to mention that it had been towed 500, but... Well, you're not supposed to interrupt there. Anyway, I was going to Brooklyn. See, I was going... Well, I've been every other place, so I thought I'd go to Brooklyn. And as I was halfway across the bridge, I heard a cry for help. I drew up to the side and I got out. "What's that?" I yelled. And then I heard the voice again. "Help, I'm drowning. Save me." "Oh," I said, "that's a shame. I beg your pardon. I don't like to see people drowning. And I don't want to break up your afternoon, but... your voice is very familiar. I can't seem to place it. Who are you?" He said, "I am H. Cornelius, a comedian, glub, glub. I'm supposed to open in Brooklyn this afternoon, glub, glub."
"What'd you do, Fred?"
"Do? I rushed over to the theater and I asked the manager if he expected an actor by the name of H. Cornelius. He said yes. Well, I said, I'm sorry, he's just drowned, so I'd like to have his job. But Rudy, I was too late. Imagine... they already had another actor in place of H. Cornelius.
Who?
The guy who pushed him in.
The overwhelming popularity of Royal Raspberry Gelatin is easy to understand if you know what it is made of. Next week, another big show with all the novelty we can command. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.